Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. And you'll want to keep that number handy because we'll be giving away four sandwiches or four salads from Urbane Cafe a little bit later in the show. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is finding inspiration. Each of today's segments is designed to help find inspiration in the world around us. My first guest gives a concise history of Western thought to analyze our contemporary nihilism and remedy it. We'll discuss his latest romp through philosophical writing titled All Things Shining. My second segment is something new. It's a call-in segment. Several of my listeners have requested this. I'm going to throw open the microphones and let callers express whatever's on their mind. We'll look at whatever topics you want to tackle. My third guest will explain the fabric of our society, entrepreneurism. What has made his journey fascinating is that he started out life as a punk. He was in a juvenile gang. He had a criminal record, and he had a lot of emotional scarring. We'll reveal his journey to where he is today from his book, Nothing to Lose. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Hubert Dreyfuss, is a professor of philosophy at the Graduate School at the University of California, Berkeley. After receiving his PhD from Harvard University, he taught at MIT before coming to Berkeley back in 1968. Hubert has been a Guggenheim Fellow and has received research grants from both the National Science Foundation and the National Endowment for the Humanities. He holds a doctorate honoris causa from Emeryus University in Rotterdam, and he's a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, joining us from Northern California. Welcome to the show, Hubert. How are you today?
Okay.
Well, good. I'm happy to have you as our guest. Love having thought leaders like yourself on the show. Your new book is titled All Things Shining, Reading the Western Classics to Find Meaning in a Secular Age. So the place I'd like to start, if we can, Hubert, is this. Let's start with the title, All Things Shining. I understand it was not your first choice for a title for this particular book, but the marketing department at your publisher kind of got in the way there and gave the book its current title. What was your original working title for this book?
I'm impressed that you know that. I didn't know anybody knew that. Well, the title we liked was Luring Back the Gods, which is a line from Moby Dick, where Ishmael talks about that he hopes that some poetical culture will be able to lure back the Homeric gods. And since we are also interested in luring back the Homeric gods, that would have been a good title. But the marketing people were right. There's so much out there now about for God and against God that it would just enter a kind of controversy where it needn't appear. Because for us, gods aren't kind of mythical, well, aren't kind of what? Aren't people, really. They're moods. They are. When Aphrodite is around, that means that the situation is very sexy and romantic.
Love is in the air, yeah.
And exactly. And if Ares is around, then everybody's in an aggressive, screaming mood. And we think that was a very rich culture, and it had all these different gods, which were different moods, and it didn't try to reconcile them and decide which one was right. The super case for that is Helen. Helen ran off from her husband Menelaus just after they'd had a child because the handsomest man in the world showed up as a visiting stranger, namely Paris. And so Helen, who was definitely sort of officially the most beautiful woman in the world, ran off from Menelaus and their kid. And that's pretty exciting and strange. If you have, but the thing I wanted to emphasize was that there's also Hera, who is the god of domesticity. Hera must have been outraged when Aphrodite beat her to Helen. And but that's a rich, exciting culture, and the people have to be, the best people are open to what moods or gods call them. A little, the way you can see it is really fascinating. In fact, the way we got into this whole book is a little thing at the beginning of the Odyssey where Helen is hosting a fancy party for a guest, namely Telemachus, the son of Odysseus. This is out trying to find out what happened to Odysseus. Mm-hmm. And there's this big deal occasion with all the local aristocrats, and she's serving wine and being the perfect hostess, putting drugs in the wine so that they don't get too upset when they talk about the Trojan War. And then she decides to tell her own story. So in front of Menelaus, who's her was her husband, lost her, got her back again, and is now, I don't know whether he's her first or her second husband, counting. But anyway, Menelaus was there. She married Paris in the meantime. And she tells how Paris came as a visitor, how Aphrodite shone on the scene, how she went off with Paris to Troy and lived there for 10 years. And when she finishes, Menelaus says, a beautiful tale, my dear, and very well told. Oh, no, now that's one translation. I like the other translation better. A beautiful tale, my dear, and very becoming. Obviously, she had done something right. And what could she have done right? Well, she was open to this god when that god appeared as an exciting, favorable possibility. She went for it, and but she also takes responsibility. She regrets the war. She discovered Paris was a kind of loser and ran and jumped into bed whenever there was Ares was around. But the important thing is that the culture really valued this responsiveness to the wonderful things that can happen that's not under your control.
All right. My guest is Hubert Dreyfuss, author of the book, co-author of the book, All Things Shining, Reading the Western Classics, Defining Meaning in a Secular Age. And I want to bring it back to today, if we can, Hubert, for just a minute, because
sure.
The basic premise of your book is that our age is special, and I use that in quotes. It's harder to find meaning in our lives in the age that we're living in today, particularly we've lost our sense of what is sacred in our existence. And in your book, you say Nietzsche said that whatever is sacred in a culture is whatever you're not allowed to laugh at. So my first question to you is, you know, in our age that we're living in today, doesn't every age believe that it is special? And what makes our age different from other ages that have come before it?
That's really good, because, yes, I think every epoch does believe that it is special. And the important thing is, it is special. There's a way of thinking that loses that, the great books way of thinking, which says, well, all these epochs in the history of our culture were getting better and better understanding of what it was to be a human being, and now we know human beings are free, autonomous, moral agents, and so forth. But that covers up the fascinating fact that there are all these, that the Homer culture was just utterly different than the Christian culture, which we, when in the book, when we talk about Dante, that's our big example. These classics that we talk about, the classics in the Western classics, aren't repeating the same moral over and over again or illustrating it differently or something. They just have an entirely different understanding of what it is to be a human being, and they live in an entirely different way. And Homer's example is an example, and our book traces, I haven't counted them lately, I think about five great classics, each of which held up to people what their age stood for. And you're right, each age stood for something which they thought they'd got it right and nobody else had got it right.
Right.
But and so do we. And but it's kind of humbling and maybe helpful, too, to realize, one, that there are these other sacred ways of being. Each culture has something about which they cannot laugh, and it's very different. And it's what's important for us, and you said you want to bring it back to us, mm-hmm. is on the margin of our culture, there are still these practices and emotions from previous ones, and we can get back in touch with them. That's where Moby Dick comes in. Melville says he's trying to get back, to lure back the gods. We mentioned that. And so the point is, for instance, we could do it with athletics. I mean,
all right, let's do it.
Okay, well, the Homeric Greeks were great into Olympic Games, for instance. That's where they come from.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still around, and they still have this character, which is they're sacred. You don't laugh at them. You let them, and if you are really in tune with them, you let them carry you away, give you an intense experience of what has sort of beauty and power, and you can still be aware of it and feel awe and gratitude, which is what the Greeks felt. But that gets harder and harder to do. Our age is more and more covering up this kind of receptive, risky life for a moral, extremely rule-following kind of life. And even worse, and that's where Nietzsche comes in that you mentioned, that the latest version is, well, you can give whatever meaning you please to human existence, and that's the highest thing you can do. And we think that if you just try to give meaning to things, it doesn't work, because the same arbitrary, easy way that you can give meaning to things, you can take it back. It doesn't have authority in your life. It doesn't give you awe and so forth and wonder to discover things that you decided were awesome and wonderful.
All right.
Got to come at you.
Let me stop you right there. My guest is Hubert Dreyfuss, author of the book All Things Shining, and I want to continue on with this whole idea of great sporting events if I can, Hubert.
Yeah.
But I want to relate it to something that a lot of my listeners relate to every January, and that is the Super Bowl. Now, how does the Super Bowl give us as a modern American society that same sense of euphoria, that same sense of rapture, for lack of a better word, that the Greeks got when looking at the Olympic Games?
Well, I think it does, and it can, because all these five, let's say, epochs and their way of life are still there on the margins, and we can, until the current situation ruins us so that we are afraid of events where everybody comes together like that, we can still do it. And I have to tell you, this is an important thing, that there's the most controversial thing about the book turns out to be just what you're asking about. What about these rallies in which people are all swept away and lose their cool and merge with their fellows and so forth? Is that a good or bad experience? All my colleagues think that we should be careful. We shouldn't let that happen to us. After all, that was the Hitler rallies had that.
Right, Nuremberg. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Then you're on that too. Yeah, the Nuremberg rallies. And when this came up, we were having dinner, Sean and I, with some of the Harvard faculty. One of them said, whenever I feel a mood like that welling up in a crowd, I turn and walk the other way. And I was stunned for a moment, and then it just came out amongst some God let me say, yeah, but when Martin Luther King had a rally on the National Mall, and these millions of people came, and they were all totally swept away, that was an important good thing for our culture. You can't rule out these dangerous rallies without ruling out the very important, also going back to the Greeks, kind of mass scene where an orator draws them all. Pericles was the big deal orator then. It could sweep them all up into a frenzy. So then the question is, well, what do we think about that? And it's hard to think about, and we've been thinking about it ever since. The first thing is, you've got to have a kind of skill. You've got to be able to tell a good rally from a bad rally, and you get the skill. And this is the unfortunately difficult part, by taking part in rallies that go wrong and realizing that when they ended up walking, running down the street, smashing the the windows of the Jews' shops and so forth. That was whatever led up to that. We don't want any more of that. But you can't give people a list of rules for how to tell which rallies to go to or not. They've got to be able to develop the skill, hopefully, because these rallies are not out in nowhere. There's a history around them. People know what's going to happen.
Right. And it doesn't have to be as far away as Nuremberg and Nazi Germany in 1933. It could be as current as today in London with the riots in the street in both London and Birmingham, crowds getting swept away. My guest is Hubert Dreyfus, author of the book All Things Shining, Reading from Western Classics to Find Meaning in a Secular Age. Hubert, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book All Things Shining?
Well, we've got a kind of proposal for people to have, which we think will give them more alive, more wonderful, more meaningful lives, and that is to, when something favorable happens, something beyond the control of the person who does it, and that's when, again, in athletics is a great place, but it happens in music, and it happens, I hope, in lectures sometimes. But when you find something that's very favorable and it's out of control, then hold on to it, appreciate it, develop it, develop the skill to bring it out more clearly, and don't sort of get sidetracked by television or by people going around telling you, don't get swept away by that. Our job is to be rational and critical. Our job is to be skilled at bringing things out at their best and showing wonder. And then when it happens, having gratitude, and the main thing is that this kind of thing happens all over. The most striking thing is in Homer. It turns out nobody's noticed this, as far as I know. I certainly haven't read the million books on the Odyssey. But anyway, the Homer is very interested in going to sleep. There's a god of sleep. And when Penelope goes to sleep, we're told that it's Athena who drops on her eyes to put her to sleep, even though she was crying about the fact that Odysseus didn't come back and so forth. And what is it about sleep that's so interesting to Homer? It's because it's a gift, as he keeps saying. You can't go to sleep by trying harder. Trying harder is just, you know, what keeps you from going to sleep. So that's the lowest, simplest version, but it's the same kind of appreciation of something that takes us over, is good for us, that we can't do by willpower. It's all over the place in Homer, and it's still all over the place here when people are going to sleep. They should notice it. They should be grateful for it.
And you'll get a greater appreciation of that from reading the book All Things Shining. Hubert, thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay.